We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Notre Dame fans, welcome back to another edition of the Irish Breakdown Podcast. My name is Brian Driscoll. That guy right there trying to needle me and get me fired up before the show even starts is Irish Breakdown recruiting analyst Sean Davis and my co-host for the Saturday RTCF show. We're going to talk recruiting. We're going to talk team and college football today. Sean, the topics are very interesting. I love the topics that we're going over today. And you and I have come up with a million topics for these, but we're both old and we talk about them on the phone. And then by the time we get to like close to Saturday, like we forget. So we've got a new strategy. As soon as we think it, we text it. And so we were able to remember the topics for this week. And we're going to call a little bit of an audible. The original plan was to say which recruiting class is most important to Notre Dame, 23 or 24. We're going to audible that to kind of talk about there a little bit of that, but more so why it's so important that Notre Dame nails it with both classes. We're going to talk about a little bit about June recruiting and just two positions where Notre Dame is in a really important position with kids that were on campus last week and this week. Talk about where things stands are with those guys at receiver and corner. And then what this month is going to teach us about Notre Dame, this Notre Dame staff ability to close. That's going to be our recruiting topic. Then we're going to talk about Notre Dame and the Heisman. Now, obviously, Notre Dame has not had a player win the Heisman Trophy since 1987. It's been a decade since anyone even finished as a runner-up to the Heisman. Yeah. And prior to that, they didn't have a real legitimate Heisman contender except until, you know, Brady Quinn, obviously, in 05 and 06. So Notre Dame and the Heisman hasn't really been much of a conversation. So Notre Dame's playoff runs in recent years have been more about the team and the best players being in positions that we don't see a lot of love for Heisman contenders, mainly defensive players.
Right.
So does Notre Dame have a top Heisman contender on the team? We're going to break down some potential candidates for it. And then also, does Notre Dame need a Heisman contender to be a playoff team and potentially a championship team? And then we're going to finish things up sort of looking at around the country, and it's going to kind of take us into some – it's a broad topic, and it's basically what makes an elite coach. Sean and I had a very interesting conversation this week about – the question, Sean, I believe you posed to me was, do you have to be an elite recruiter to be an elite coach? And then that sparked a lot of other conversations. So we're going to dive into what makes an elite coach and what are the things that we need to learn about Coach Freeman in regards to what he has, what we've seen that he has, and then what he needs to show in regards to whether or not he has the ability to be an elite football coach. So that's today's topic, Sean. So I have a feeling this is not going to be a short show. So buckle up. And Sean has already started needling me before even the show even started, trying to get me fired up, talking about things that he knows are going to get me really mad. So, and he did it on purpose because as soon as I reacted, he started laughing. So he's trying to start some stuff today, y'all. I'm just preparing you for that right now. It's going to get wild. So, Sean, let's start off with recruiting. In the original topic, we were going to say which class is most important for Notre Dame's future success.
Yeah.
23. And 24, 23 or 24. And we'll kind of briefly talk about that. And the premise was obviously 23 can be that foundational class. 24 is the class that you kind of, is this going to be the class that takes you over the top? Because you can't just have one or two classes, because we both think 22, for all its flaws, short at receiver, you know, is Steve Angeli a guy you can win a championship with? A couple other things, no true safeties. It also laid a great foundation on defense. You got Tobias Merriweather, you got Jadarian Price, you got a really good offensive line class, you got a great tight end class. And then 23 is stacking up on top of it, and then 24. And the premise was, the reason 24 could end up being the most important class is because right now there's uncertainty about whether or not Notre Dame's going to get a quarterback that's that elite player in the 23 class. At the end of the day, Sean, it really comes down to it is, what this is really about, more than anything, is you had a 21 class that was loaded offensively. Tyler Buchner, Blake Fisher, Joe Wald, Logan Diggs. You had Audric Estime, Kane Barong, Mitchell Evans, Lorenzo Styles, Deion Colsey. I mean, do I need to go on, right? Jaden Thomas. Not as good defensively.
Right.
22 class, great defensively. Really strong D-line class. The best linebacker class in the country, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The best cornerback tandem that, like, 1-2 punch Notre Dame has signed in a long time. I would argue, as far as where they were in high school and what I value them in high school, going back to the T. Shepherd Kavari Russell duo in 2012. And then, you know, yes, you didn't get a pure safety, but man, really good, really, really good defensive class. Offensive class, we said, has some holes. 23 and 24, to me, Sean, are the classes that are going to determine whether or not Notre Dame's going to have a couple really good teams in like 24 and 25 as these classes get older, or is Notre Dame laying the foundation for sustained success? I think that's really what we kept coming down to is, yes, it's great if Notre Dame finishes with a top three class in 23, but if they don't follow that up with another balanced, deep, top, also with some top heaviness class, then they're not going to be that much better than what they've been as the schedule amps up. Because that's the balance, right? So they've had a lot of success because the schedule wasn't strong. They're going to have better teams, but you've got Ohio State, Clemson, Miami, Texas A&M, you know, Bama. There's a lot on the schedule moving forward, Sean, that this is going to this duo, this combination is really going to be what determines whether or not Notre Dame can truly kick down that door and get in the upper echelon when it comes to recruiting programs.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What you're talking about is the perfect annex to what we talked about last week as far as development and how players are going to improve under a different culture. That's something that we should see, especially at those positions that you just mentioned. And from a recruiting standpoint, 23 and 24, we always talked about this, right? What two classes really laid the foundation for Nick Saban?
Mm-hmm.
And it was 08 and 09.
Right.
Like back-to-back.
The premise started with the 1-08.
Right.
And then as we talked further, you realize, like, wow, these two together are what it was.
Right. And what it was, you lay the foundation, but 08 was the first, which we'll go to a Heisman conversation later in the show. They got that one Heisman guy.
Mm-hmm.
at a skill position, and that was Julio Jones.
And he wasn't even their best player.
No, no. So
Julio,
right? So when you start to think about this, you start to talk about why closing on some of these receivers in the 23 class, and why some of the expected commitments in the 24 class coming up, possibly over the next month and a half, bodes very well for what we're trying to establish. That's not just like what Alabama did, but it's along the same blueprint of starting to get in difference makers, gap closers, as we say, and then starting building towards the supplemental part. And you say, look, what's the supplemental part of the 23 and 24 class? What we do on the field. Mm-hmm. Like, the momentum has been started with the 23 class. That momentum has carried over to the 24 class, and getting that started at a better rate than the 23 class was started at. Now, you have to back that up and supplement that by going out and getting 10, 11 wins and a good bowl win in a New York Six Bowl, or a win in the college football playoff, right, to take that next step and build upon that. So, like you said, the wide receiver position for me is not so much, you just said, he wasn't necessarily the best player. Mm-hmm. But he was a threat. Like I told you all week, I shared with you, I've been watching a lot of tape from last year just in preparation for fall camp and talking about individual players and what we expect from them. And the main thing I see, how do I say this? Because I don't want to make it seem like we don't have talent. I'm waiting for the Will Fuller to show up.
Sure.
That's what I mean.
Sure.
The guy that the defensive coordinator is absolutely frightened of every week. Who is that guy on the roster? And that's going to be one of the interesting things to see from Chauncey Stuckey, what he's done, how he's developed guys. Braden Lindsey has speed, but can he be the guy that defenses fear, right, each and every week? Lorenzo Styles Jr. has promise.
Right.
Can he become that guy that defenses fear every week? I guess that guy right now would be Michael Mayer, mm-hmm, for a defensive coordinator.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
But as far as wide receiver and then going to cornerback, we expect Cam Hart to take another step.
Right.
We expect him to take another step. But then the supplemental pieces.
Right. Know? And that's where this recruiting thing comes to, Sean, is like you're talking about the cornerback that we're all banking on being a stud this year. It was a kid that they recruited to play wide receiver.
Wide receiver, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of been the issue. And you know, when you go back to that Bama class, what's fascinating about it is what a lot of people – you hear this argument. Well, Bama won titles because they recruit a bunch of number one classes. Well, that eventually became true.
Yeah.
But that certainly wasn't true on the foundational level. And you know, you want to point this out as far as where Notre Dame is. So if you look at that 09 title team and you look at the, you know, I say like the five classes that make that up. So you're going to have the fifth year seniors, which is 05. Then you have 06, 07, 08. And then you have the true freshman class because Bama won their first title in 2009. So if you look at that 05 class, Bama's recruiting class, this is the 247 Sports Composite Rankings. Their 2005 recruiting class, which means all their fifth-year seniors, were ranked 15th in the country. Their 2006 class, which would mean all of their seniors on that 2009 championship team that went undefeated, ranked – oh, and beat Tim Tebow's Florida team in the SEC title game.
Yeah.
12th. The 2007 class, which makes up the juniors, finished 12th. The 2008 class, which would include the sophomores, that's the Julio Jones, Mark Ingram class, that finished third. And then their freshman class, which had some players on it in that title team, but not a ton, finished third. The class that they had the year that they won the title, the class they signed right after that, finished fourth. It wasn't until the 2011 class that Alabama landed a number one class. And then, of course, began the run that they went on.
Yeah.
And the point is that recruiting is about building a team. And it's about stacking good classes on top of each other. And if you go back and you look at some of those, you know, those 06 and 07 classes that Bama had, and you look at some of the players that were on it, Sean, you know, it's one of those things where they weren't necessarily landing a lot of like truly elite classes, but what they were doing is they were landing players at very important positions, and they were building up the line slowly over time. They're building up the lines. And it wasn't until 08 and 09, to your point about receiver and running back, that Bama really started to load up on elite skill.
Yeah.
And you look at Julio Jones and you know, because their starting cornerbacks in 2009, the title team were Javier Arenas and Kareem Jackson. Now, you may think, oh, those are NFL guys. Those are high draft picks. But they were three-star recruits. And if I remember correctly, I think Javier Arenas' top pick, top offer other than Bama was something like Florida International and like UConn. Thing where Javier Arenas was like Bowling Green or something, like some absurd like that, right? Like, they weren't guys that anybody looked at and said, boy, that's a dude. But here's who they did sign in those classes, right? They signed Greg McElroy, who's a game manager quarterback, right? They signed Andre Smith. You know, they signed, you go through, you know, Justin Woodall, you know, really solid player. Javier Arenas, I'm looking at it right now, 5.5 ranking on Rivals, 3.3 star. That's what he was part of the 06 class, right? Then you go to the 07 class. And you look at some of the guys they got in that class, it's the same thing. It's you know, it's skill, it's offensive linemen, right? It's linebackers, it's Rolando McClain, it's Luther Davis, it's, you know, it's Josh Chapman, it's guys like that, right? It's a bunch of, it's Kareem Jackson, you know, it's guys that Marquise Mays, who was a key part of that, another three-star recruit. Then you go to the 08 class, and it's Julio Jones, right? It's remember Star Jackson. Remember that guy at quarterback? You remember him? He was the guy that was supposed to be this really good quarterback. You know, they continue recruiting offensive linemen. You know, Bear Jones was part of that class. He was more important to that 11-12. You know, Dante Hightower, Jarrell Smith, you know, Terrence Cody, Marcel Darius. I mean, now all of a sudden you start getting the elite players, right? Yeah. The guys that really put the team on that next level. And Mark Barron, Mark Ingram, as you mentioned, right? Who, you know, so that's when you started to really add in that next level skill, like where they really started bringing in big time players. And then of course, in 09, the freshman class included Trent Richardson and Eddie Lacy. It's a pretty good running back group, right? You had DJ Fluker was part of that group. Chance Warmack was part of that. James Carpenter was part of that group. Nico Johnson was a five-star kid, very highly ranked player. Quentin Dial was a highly ranked player. Dre Kirkpatrick was a five-star player. So that's when the elite skill started to come. And that's where I think you look at the last couple years, they've added some kids here and there, but you haven't been able to stack back and on top of each other those classes. And I think that's where we kind of settled in on is why it's so important that these classes kind of comp. It's not just have a great – here's what Notre Dame has been doing, Sean. One year they would do really well at a position, and the next year not so much.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, you look like, hey, they got talent, right? Because they've got this players. But then it's like 05 and, or 15 and 16 D-line classes. In 2015, you land Jerry Tillery.
Yeah.
2016, you land Daylon Hayes, Khalid Kareem, Julian Aguara. You know. But then you look at it and you're like, you signed zero defensive ends in 2015 and you signed zero defensive tackles in 2016. Can't do that.
Can't have it.
No. Right. And then in 2017, your best defensive end is like Jonathan McAllister.
Right.
And, you know, you did well inside. You got Myron Tungvaluah late. You got Kurt Heinisch. Those were very important players. But you couldn't follow that 2016 stud edge class with another comparable class.
Right.
And that's really why this is so important. And 21 and 22 is a perfect example of that. Elite linebacker in class in 22. Who'd they sign at linebacker in 21?
Like, are you asking me?
It's rhetorical. No, it's pausing for effect.
Okay.
Prince Kali, great player. But then right. It's like, Who else? A kid that's going to go on a Mormon mission after a year, right? It's just like you didn't build those, you didn't stack those. You know, you got Tyson Ford and Aiden Gobira. Year before, you got Jason Onye and Gabriel Rubio. Who do you have right now that's on the roster that's a defensive end from that class? Nope, nobody.
Yeah.
Because Will Schweitzer's playing linebacker and Devin Upau moved to linebacker before transferring.
Yeah.
And so that's what's so important about this class. And defensively, it's you could actually look at 22 and 23 as stacking on top of each other. Really, we can have that conversation. But the reason we're going 23 and 24 is because offensively, you didn't have the kind of class you needed skill-wise. I mean, Tobias Merriweather's, in my opinion, the best receiver they've signed in a decade.
Yeah.
But he was one guy. They needed three. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's just another example of it. So 23 and 24, and right now Notre Dame has the number one ranked 23 class. Here's the wild part, Sean. Notre Dame's off to an even better start in 2024.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And let me point this out, because I think what Marcus Freeman is doing is so amazing, because you talked about what Nick Saban did. I think he and Marcus Freeman did an incredible job at identifying. When you're trying to establish a culture, change the culture, and lay the groundwork, you can't recruit everything, right? You can't. Nick Saban, like you said, his focus was the trenches. Like, I'm going to focus on the trenches and make sure I get difference makers in the trenches. And then once we build and start winning games, I'll go get the skilled players to add to that. Marcus Freeman, as soon as he got here as a defensive coordinator, he quickly identified range, length, he as a coordinator.
Who was the first kid that Marcus Freeman went after when he got here and flipped? It's Tyson Ford.
Tyson Ford.
Not a linebacker.
No.
A big, long. To your point, big, yeah. Long kid. Who was another kid he immediately jumped on? Aiden Gobira.
Aiden Gobira.
To your point,
yeah,
he understands the foundation. What's the first assistant coach they made a hard run at when Marcus Freeman took over? It's Harry Hiestand.
Harry Hiestand. I mean, that was mutual.
Right.
Which was a great thing.
Right.
But that is the identification. And I will say this. Before he fully invested in recruiting, Nick Saban invested more in his coaching staff to be able to establish the culture and the development of the players that were there. Marcus Freeman, in my opinion, has done the same thing. Mm-hmm. We talked about it all January, right? We were waiting, like, man, I want to see how this staff breaks out, how it plays out. And when everything was said and done and the smoke had cleared, we were pleasantly surprised with the staff that he had put together. There were a couple of hires that might have caught us by surprise because we thought they might go in another direction. When you look at the totality of the staff, when you look at the word I used last week and I'll continue to use, the audacity of this staff on the recruiting trail to just go wherever they want to go and offer kids in the backyards of some of the top programs in the nation, it just lets you know that there is no fear. And do you remember the movie 8 Mile?
Oh, come on now.
All right. So do you remember how, and I'm not trying to rile you up, just I'm prefacing that, but do you remember how Bunny B. Rabbit pretty much said what he thought Papa Doc was going to say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Marcus Freeman is a...
And he said that to the guy before, too. You're saying the same that he said. You know what I mean?
Marcus Freeman is very shrewd. Yeah. He knows what has been used against Notre Dame for years. And he is comfortable being the first one to say it. He'll sit down with Dennis Dodd and talk about it. Yeah. He'll talk about it. He'll talk about those things as far as, academics. We love academics. That's what makes us unique. Yeah, they don't do that at our schools like Ohio State.
Right.
Here, we're different. We're unique.
Even though he never called Ohio State out like that. No, like, I get your point.
He's not afraid to talk about those subjects and put them out in front and use them as an asset to diffuse negative recruiting rather than using them as an excuse for why they can't get guys in the program.
Correct. It's what we've talked about from day one with this. And I'm not talking about with Marcus Freeman. This was something we discussed during the Brian Kelly era is stop using what makes you unique as a negative. Stop turning what makes you unique as a negative. Stop getting on television and talking about how hard this is and how bad this is and blah, 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 blah. And as you said, Marcus Freeman has embraced those things and he's not afraid to say it. And I've met a lot of Notre Dame fans over the years that, and it's not even BK PTSD, because I think it goes back way further than that. It's just, it's a much bigger thing where, you know, they get uncomfortable when you start talking about all the things about Notre Dame that make it unique. Yeah. When you say, Notre Dame is better than that school. Oh, hold on a second. That's why other schools hate us. They're going to hate you regardless.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So you might as well at least embrace what makes you special. because this is what people that want don't like you are going to do. This is what, and you know, what people that I would consider, you know, your enemies, so to speak, are going to do. They are going to try to convince you to not continue to rely on your strengths because, you know, it's not appropriate. It's not fair. You think you're better than us. It's this, it's that, it's not this, it's that. And it's like in an attempt to try to get you to stop using your strengths as your primary weapon. And Marcus Freeman, to his credit, has said, no, I don't care if people aren't gonna like us no matter what. All right. I ask is that you quote me correctly, right. Number one.
Right.
And he didn't shy away in the interview the next day with Bobby Carpenter and Anthony Schlegel. He didn't shy away from what he said about Notre Dame. He just said what he said, I said about Ohio State, I didn't say. And he cleared the record, but he didn't back down and say, well, you know, Notre Dame's, those are also great schools, and they're on the same part. No, 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 he didn't say that. He said, this is what makes Notre Dame unique.
Yes.
Those are big schools. Here's the reality. Here's what I actually said about it.
And on top of that, Carpenter and Schlegel still tried to negative recruit.
Tried.
They tried.
Tried.
They said, oh, are they still living with the other students?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like they used to. It's like, tried. Dude, stop.
And then he kind of not.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing is I think that's why you're seeing the success. But that's the unique thing about like what Nick Saban did early on. And Dabo Sweeney did the same thing at Clemson. If you go look at his first five classes that built the 2015 and 2016 title teams, I mean, Dabo Sweeney didn't have a consensus or composite number one ranked class until like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
His two best recruiting classes ever made up the worst team he's had in over a decade, right? I mean, Notre Dame out-recruited Clemson in four of the 5 years going into the 2015 season when Clemson beat Notre Dame and was the runner-up for the national title game. And it was where did he build? It was building around the lines, right? And then eventually you kind of fit enough of those Mike Williams's and Deshaun Watson's and, you know, players like that around it. But he built around the lines, especially the defensive line.
Yeah,
they really built around the defensive line, and that's what Notre Dame is doing. And I think Marcus Freeman understands that. But at the same time, you're seeing Notre Dame really work to go out and say, hey, yes, we're going to be building the trenches, but we're not just going to go out there and recruit a bunch of power forwards only and just, you know, smart kids at corner who can't run. We're going to get smart kids at corner that can run. And that's the interesting thing. And that's kind of, sort of, we transition into the second part of this recruiting topic of conversation, Sean, is that's what makes this 23, this June so important for the 23 class. Mm-hmm. Because I think Notre Dame has to lay a foundation in 23 at certain skill positions to set a foundation for 2024 and to just recover the roster and get the roster where it needs to be a receiver and then upgrade the talent, which is what's needed at corner. And so when you look at who's on campus this summer, Sean, at receiver, your receiver class is going to get – it's going to be a make or break. And let's just tie these last two together,
yeah.
Sean, instead of separately, because I think it's going to be hard to – it's going to be hard for us to not talk about one than the other.
Right.
And that is the idea of closing. You have to – this staff's done a great job of, like, laying a good foundation. You know, they've gotten players. But can you close well enough – like, they've shown they can close well enough to be a top-five class. There's no way this is not going to be a top-five class, in my opinion. Like, unless – the recruiting people just completely say, we're going to screw this program over and we're just going to drop all their kids.
All the players.
Right?
Right.
Keon Keeley's dropped outside the top 40, you know, nonsense like that, right? This is going to be a top five class. But can you close enough to make it a top 2 to 3 class or number one class? That's the question. And you look at guys like Jason Moore, defensive line. You look at like Caleb Downs at safety. You look at Jaden Osbury. You look at Charles Jagasaw. You know, Jeremiah Love, guys like that. That's really important. But there's two positions especially that right now, if you point to them, along with quarterback, are the only three positions right now where Notre Dame hasn't met their needs. Like, if Notre Dame doesn't sign another offensive lineman, they've met their number need. And it's a good offensive line class.
Yeah.
It would be one of the 10 best in the country. They need they need one of Jagasaw or Freeling to make it a top five recruiting class. And then they need both to make it number one, in my view, or at least number one based on what other teams have done in the past. It may still end up being number one this year. We'll have to look and see what teams do. But just comparing to like other great line classes, it's still excellent. but numbers-wise, they're okay. They're good at tight end. They're good at running back numbers-wise. They're good on the defensive line numbers-wise. They met their needs. They really only needed two linebackers in this class as far as just a pure need. Right. They've got two. They've already got, in my opinion, the best safety tandem in the country already. The positions where they are short are quarterback, receiver, and corner. They have one player at all those three positions committed, just one. Last weekend and this weekend at receiver, we'll start with receiver first. All the kids that you need to make this one of the 5 to 6 best receiver classes in the country, which is ultimately the need, you have to get one of those groups, are on campus. And it's now about, can you close?
Yeah.
And last weekend, it was Ronan Hanifin, and it was Micah Tees, and it was Rico Flores. This week, it's Jaden Greathouse. And let's just kind of go through each one of those guys, Sean, and just kind of give the latest and just really talk about what we're going to learn about this Notre Dame staff. And let's start with Ronan Hanifin, because he's the guy we've talked probably the most about of all these receivers.
Yeah.
This is such an interesting recruitment, because in every way possible, you think this should have been an easy one for Notre Dame. But it really wasn't. And I'll have a lot more to say about his recruitment when it's all said and done, but it wasn't as easy as some people might think, especially once Clemson and Bama and Ohio State and all those programs started making a hard push. And so to me, I think they're going to get him, right? We've always felt that. We're not concerned about that. It just was more of when.
Yeah.
Can you get him to decide soon enough to then go close the deal? And we'll find out here in the next couple weeks, because he does have a couple more visits scheduled. Can they get him? Rico Flores has a commitment date coming up on July 3rd. Georgia canceled his visit this weekend. Some people that I've talked to have kind of spun it as, Georgia's full is kind of the thing they said to him. But I know for a fact that Georgia's still reaching out to receivers in hopes of finding receivers. This strikes me as we're not beating Ohio State and Notre Dame for that kid.
Right.
We're definitely not beating both of them. So let's bow out and save face. Because nobody plays that recruiting game as well as Kirby Smart.
Yeah.
I mean, he does that extremely well. And then Micah Tees. And you look at him, Sean, you got to close on two of those three guys. Two of those three guys. And then this weekend, it's Jaden Greathouse. And this is the one that to me is going to be the most it's going to be the most telling. Jaden Greathouse. They've been on him for a long time. They have been his leader for a long time, ever since he visited for the Blue Gold game, and I would argue before then. He has since said he is going to take his recruitment in the fall. You've got to do everything you can as a staff to make sure that doesn't happen. And that's what this weekend's going to be about with Jaden Greathouse. And he's bringing mom and dad with him.
Yep.
That's what they got to accomplish this weekend, in my opinion, Sean.
So when you talk about that and the ability to close, it's one of those things that has always been one of the things Notre Dame has had to do, right? They've had to be able to get out and be aggressive in recruiting and get kids into their classes before the fall. Because they really didn't want to go into the fall and end up battling Alabama, Ohio State for kids, because they didn't have, well, to be honest, they didn't have a guy on that last leg that could really close and battle as far as the head coaches. Now they have someone that can. But this is the anticipation for this coaching staff. You know there are certain guys that you're going to have to battle for in the fall. You plan for those guys. You much rather have 4 to 5 guys you can focus on and really go after them hard than to go into the fall having to get 10 guys into your class. And I think what you talked about in the month of June hinges not so much on the ability of the staff, but the momentum of the relationships between both classes. I've never seen a relationship between two classes already as tightly as the relationship between the 23 and 24 class has been established and has continued to push forward. When you think about the fact that in the biggest weekend, which was last weekend for recruiting for Notre Dame, CJ Carr and Brandon Davis Swain chose to come. They have an impact. They feel like they have an impact on 23 and they have an impact on 24. They recognize this. And I think when you talk about family, when you talk about brotherhood, when you talk, think about everything that really goes into recruiting, it takes something special. Brian, you've been skeptical. I've been skeptical. It's going to take something special to get Caleb Downs out of the South.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't say we're Notre Dame, we win games, we have academics. No, there has to be a connection
right
with those kids in his class.
Yep.
With the Don Shula, with Peyton Bowen, and all of the other safeties to say, I want to play with those guys.
Yep.
I hear what you're saying, Georgia. I hear what you're saying, Alabama. I want to play with those guys. And this is what Marcus Freeman is establishing, not just with his staff being able to close, but he has empowered the players in each class to be a part of the closing process as well. That's what's amazing about what we're going to continue to see with 23, hopefully in the month of June, and 24 as we get into that class starting to commit to Notre Dame.
Well, the hope is the CJ Carr can have a big effect because they're going to need him to close out a receiver. And that's the big thing for me is like that is a position where you say, well, what positions are you concerned about them not really having a really strong class? And yeah, it's receiver and corner and quarterback because they don't have any guys in there except for, you know, Braylon James. And as good as Braylon James is, a top 100 player on my board, he can't be the only guy for a second year in a row. Now, he won't be the only guy. I'm confident they're going to get at least three. It's but can you really close on the top of the board guys? And so I think that's going to be the key. And I think CJ Carr had an effect. I mean, I've talked to sources. The 23 kids were raving about that kid last week. That's important. The other position that's important, Sean, it's important from a practical standpoint and it's important from a perception standpoint, and that is corner. And even this morning, there was a comment on the message board, and the comment was basically, you know, Notre Dame's been weak at corner for a while. And I don't understand where this notion comes from.
This goes back to what someone said 2 weeks ago, right? During the show.
It really boggles my mind a little bit because we're not that far removed from a time when Notre Dame had one, in my opinion, one of the three or four best corner tandems in all of college football.
Yeah.
In Julian Love, a consensus All-American, and Troy Pride. Yeah. It was really good that season, especially the second half of the season. And then you look at the next year, they weren't as good, but they were still good at corner that next year. They were solid in 2020, and they were solid last year with one really good individual player and then question marks on the other side. The cornerback position the last 2 years has not been good enough for Notre Dame to be a title contending team because of the cornerback position. It just hasn't. Last year, if Notre Dame would have got matched up against Bama, a healthy Bama team in the postseason, they'd have had a hard time covering the other receiver. Cam Hart could go up against somebody, but the other receiver would have been a problem. Same thing if they'd have faced Ohio State last year. Similar kind of thing. So we're not saying that the cornerback position is elite, but it's like we're gauging it on can you win a title with that group. And I don't really understand why people have this thing like the cornerback position has been this awful position. I don't understand it. Then it hit me. It's because they're looking at recruiting rankings. And that can be my only explanation. And like, you know, look, they've had some bad games here and there.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously you need to get better at that other cornerback position. But and then somebody said, if you close this month on Micah Bell and Christian Gray, if you're able to do that, they're like, is this when this is the best corner tandem since? And it was left open. I'm like, since last year?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But then it hit me again. Why is Benjamin Morris not getting more love? Because he wasn't ranked very high.
Right.
Like, okay, it's hitting me now, right? Like, if Benjamin Morrison was the same player but got the proper ranking, then people would be more excited about him, even though film says the same thing. It's really been kind of puzzling, Sean. But at the end of the day, I think Mike Mickens in this class, who Mike Mickens has had two recruiting classes, and they've both been pretty good so far at corners. But and they've both gotten better. First year was really deep. When he needed depth because the numbers were a mess.
Right.
And he got depth. And then year two, they needed to up the talent level, and he did just that. I mean, they beat Alabama and Washington for Benjamin Morrison. There aren't many better teams in the country in producing cornerback talent the last 5-6 years than Alabama and Washington. And then they went and got Jade Mickey, who was a top 150 player and a really good football player. And so he trajectory. Now it's about building stacking those classes. And that's why this month of June is so important. You had Christian Gray on campus last week. Micah Bell on campus this week, and you're talking about two top 100 players. And the funny thing is there's a perception that, these two kids are way better than last year's class. Why? Simply because of recruiting rankings. You know what I mean? But the point is they are very good, and it's very important that Notre Dame close out. And I think the other thing that I love about this group duo too is, Sean, you've gotten to know Christian Gray really well, and we're in the process of getting to know Micah Bell very well. But you're talking about Christian Gray is ranked as the number 78 player in the entire country on the On3 consensus, and he's like 94th on the composite ranking for 247.
Yeah,
Micah Bell is still outside the top 100. He's 119 on the composite, and he's 120 on the it's 120 on the composite, 119 on the consensus. But he's ranked 55th by 247 Sports. He's only ranked that low because On3 is this crazy outlier that has him. Like, they have him as the number 63 player in Texas. 247 Sports has him as the number 55 player in the country. So you got this one weird outlier that's dragging him down. Once they kind of course correct a little bit, he's going to jump into the top 100. You have two top 100 players. They need to finish. They cannot come out of the month of July because those kids are scheduled to commit July 1st for Michael Bell, July 3rd, 4th for Christian Gray. They have to go. Mike Mickens has to bat 1,000 because they need him talent-wise. And they need them perception-wise. And I think that latter part is, in this instance, Sean, is just as important as the practical part, because it's a chance for Mike Mickens to finally get people to say, shut up, look what I'm doing, have a little faith, because we're really rebuilding this thing with some big-time football players.
You know, it's interesting you brought up that point as far as being able to win a championship. You know, we used to talk about Georgia early last season. I used to be like, Brian, oh, man, this defense is amazing. And you would point out to me, like, Sean, their defensive backfield really isn't that good.
Right.
You know, because they really haven't been challenged yet. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you know, they get to Josh Heupel in Tennessee, and you start to see some cracks just from scheme from a really good offensive play caller. And then they get to Alabama, and it's like, oh, boy. Yeah, they're in trouble.
Right.
And to say that Notre Dame hasn't had a defensive backfield good enough to win a national championship.
Since 18.
Since 18. You're probably right. But, you know, we did just watch a team win a national championship that had maybe a slightly above average defensive backfield.
Cornerbacks. Like, even Lewis seen more of a run defender.
Yes.
The point isn't that you can't win a title with them. What I'm saying is you're not winning because of them.
No.
Is what I'm saying. Because you can find holes
right in
every title team. I mean, where you say, boy, that group alone is not – you're not winning titles with that group alone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, can they be complementary to what you have? That's my thing. Because I feel that Notre Dame's cornerback group was good enough to win a title in 17. I feel the cornerback tandem was good enough to win a title in 18 and good enough to win a title in 15. When you look at what they were around at other positions, in 18, they were the strength of your defense, in my opinion, were your corners. It's relative to, can that group be the reason that you go out and win a title? It's just so we're understanding what I'm saying there. And that's the difference. You can win. You could have won a championship last year with that corner, even with Clarence Lewis, if you got the right draw.
Yeah.
And whereas in 2018, it didn't. I don't care who the draw was. Julian Love and the only thing that could stop that cornerback tandem from being really great is one of them gets hurt.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened. But then you get into the depth. They don't have the depth that other people have.
Right.
And that's an issue as well. But the thing is cornerback has to get better. But at Notre Dame, you're not going to just fix that in one class by going out and getting a bunch of five-star players, because the last time you've developed a first-round pick at cornerback was 1993, before any of these kids were born, and that stuff matters.
Wow.
They have the last second-round pick they've produced at corner was Allen Rossum. You know, so you're not just going to go out there and convince a bunch of five-stars, just especially that first year Mike Mickens couldn't even go on the road and travel to see recruits because of COVID.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those things where when you look at what they did last year and what they're doing now, they're close, but he has to close on these two kids. It's imperative. I would argue it's other than quarterback, it's the position that from a talent plus perception standpoint is the most important position for Notre Dame to hit a home run on. And in my opinion, Christian Gray and Micah Bell would be a home run, in my view.
Now, I think
talented players, highly ranked, great offer lists, and compliments to each other.
Complement each other in the class, absolutely.
Right.
And then you stack that, like you said, on Morrison and Nikki and what you have in the freshman class, and then what you have in the sophomore class and the junior class. Now you start to build some of that continuity. And that continuity, once again, leads to when kids come on campus, they start to build relationships with guys that they see making plays and making a difference on the field. It matters. It matters a lot, that continuity in recruiting. Because you would tell me all the time, like, you can host a kid, but that kid is going to find somebody to say something negative during this trip. Like, it's going to pop up. And if you don't have that continuity and everyone buying into the culture, then you really can't hide everything on the recruiting, you know, on the recruiting front. I don't work, in my humble opinion, this is just my personal opinion from knowing Christian Gray and spending time talking to him and spending time talking to him this month. You know, he's out at USC right now. I really believe it comes down to Notre Dame and LSU. And I think we've said that before. We've chronicled the reasons. And I'm telling you, the ace, if you're playing spades right now, Notre Dame can go ahead and put the big joker on their forehead. Because the big joker in his recruiting is the relationships.
Yes.
That are on that 23 class, in that 23 class.
No one else has that. And more. I think it's also the players on the team.
Yes.
And that's why last weekend's visit was so impactful for Christian Gray and why this weekend's important for Micah Bell. Because, as you said, when a kid gets on campus, you're not going to hide any net. You're not. Not for an official. You can do it for an unofficial, but not for an official. What we're saying is you're – it goes back to the conversation last week, the culture. We've talked about the fact that the staff's a little bit worried because nobody transferred. You know, and it's because that there's such buy-in right now. And I think that helps. I think that's really helped with this recruiting class because it's like, man, I'm getting around these kids because kids know. They know they're going to need to recruit. They know. They know. They know that kids are being straight with them or not. They know.
Yeah.
And when you hear the buy-in, man, I love this guy. I love playing for this guy. He pushes us. He wants a lot from us. You know, he encourages us. It's not, you know, oh, he's a player's coach. What does that mean? Well, here's what it means in this instance. You know, coach is demanding. He expects a lot of us. Our locker room's got to be clean. We got to go to class every day. We got to do this. We got to do that. But you know what? He's always got our back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think those are the things you're getting that buy-in, and that buy-in is then leading to success on the recruiting trail.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, that buy-in's only – it's like this, Sean. There's all these different pieces to recruiting, and all of them have to be there. You can't just be good in two or three and not good in two or three others. It all has to be there. The coaches have to work hard. You have to have a head coach that can close. You have to have – you know, a program the kids want to be a part of. You have to have the culture that these kids are going to come into and be like, man, I want to be a part of that culture. And also have the culture where the kids are willing to come up to the coaches. And I've heard this too over the last year, is to walk into and say, hey, coach, we don't want that kid. He's not going to fit into this culture, right? Like, here's why we say that.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not because this kid plays the same position as my buddy. It's not like that. That doesn't happen. It's more of a, you know, this is what this kid was talking about on this visit. This is what he was saying in this visit. He's not going to be part of it. He's not going to be part of this band of brothers. He's going to want to do his own thing and all this. And, you know, we don't want that guy. That's happened before.
Right.
And if you have the right culture from a player level, that's an important thing. That's how you can help mitigate the potential risk of bringing in a kid that just doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And at times in the past, they have overlooked that and it has cost them. And this staff has put a lot more emphasis on that. Like, do you guys want to play this guy or not? You know what I mean? And that's important. And so all those things are coming down to it, and it gets down to the point now, though, Sean, is at the end of the day, this is all sounds great and fine and dandy, but they got to prove that they can win in these battles that are going to be a little harder.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Jason Moore, the Jaden Osburys, the Micah Bells, the Christian Grays, the Charles Jagasols, the Caleb Downses, you know, Jaden Greathouse, Ronan Hannafin, Rico Flores, Charles Jagasol, Monroe Freeling. You got to bat a pretty high – because here's the thing. The board's super shallow right now.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of dudes on the board, and they still need 10 to 12 kids. They can still get 10 to 12 kids. There's not many more than that on the board. And so they're betting on themselves to say, we don't need to expand the board because we're going to get all these kids. That's pretty arrogant, and I kind of dig it.
It makes you feel good, though. It makes you feel
because good. I feel like they're actually capable of doing it. If I'll tell you right now, if this was a year ago and they needed to fill 10 to 12 slots and they only had 17, 18 kids on the board, I'd be like, this isn't going to be good.
Yeah.
Because they're at 15 right now. They want at least 10 more kids in this class.
Yeah.
Which seems like a lot, especially when you think about how shallow the board is. Like, dude, there's not that much many more than 10, 12 kids on the board, period. But so far that's what they've done.
Yeah.
And so that's the interesting part, but they're going to have to, they're betting on themselves and they're going to have to be right if they're going to finish. And I think right now they're in a position, and that's what this June has been so important to, Sean, and getting back to receiver and corner, I think those two positions as much as any other, the quarterback's a different animal. We'll address that down the road. But if those two positions also don't finish strong, like you can overcome not getting an elite quarterback since you got CJ Carr. Again, I still want Dante Moore. This is not about anything negative against Dante Moore. I still want him. Sean, you know my stance on that. I'm on that train until
still want him.
Yes, I'm on that train until signing day, and he signs somewhere else.
Absolutely.
I don't care if he commits somewhere else. That's just me. If I was the head coach, I'd say I'm recruiting him then. You know what I mean? Like, right. I'm bringing this kid in. That's how it would be for me, but that's a different conversation. So if you miss there, to me, you can't miss anywhere else. That's the thing. You can't miss anywhere else.
Right.
And that's why receiver and corner are so important. And I would argue adding one more linebacker is important. And then I would add, and after that, it's about, okay, then can you add the guys that aren't necessarily needs from a number standpoint, but needs from an impact talent standpoint. That's Jagasol and Freeling. That's Jason Moore. That's Samuel Mpemba. That's Jaden Osbury. And that's Caleb Downs. Right? Like, I would argue that at all those positions, there's not a need for all of them from a number standpoint. The need is you're closing that gap, baby. And we're bringing in the best players because look at all the kids that they're going against for those guys.
Yeah.
Right? Caleb Downs, Bama, Georgia, Ohio State. Jaden Osbury, it's like LSU, it's Texas A&M, it's Auburn, right? You look at Christian Gray, it's LSU, it's Ohio State, it's USC. I mean, you just kind of go down that list, and it's one of those things where you're like, you're going to have to beat some dudes to get these kids, right? Jason Moore, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan. I mean, Samuel Mpemba, pick a school. And they're recruiting him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and so we're going to find out if this staff can really close. Because here's the thing about Keon Keeley. They got Keon Keeley before Keon became a five-star that everybody wanted. It's a different animal than signing him after he became
right.
a five-star. They've been holding on, and they've done a great job of that because Keon is a great fit. But you didn't have to convince Keon he was a great fit. Keon already knew he was a great fit before Bama and everybody else got on him.
Yeah.
And that's what's different. And that's why we're going to learn a lot about this staff over the next month. I'm going to impromptu question on you, Sean. And this was asked on our message board. And this was asked on a show earlier today. Notre Dame is at 15 commits right now in the 2023 class.
Yep.
They are currently at 3 commits in the 2024 class.
Mm-hmm.
What's amazing about that is they have the number one class in 2023. Two parts of this. Last year, they did not get a single commitment from the 2023 class until June 28th. So we're still 10 days away. At this time a year ago, Notre Dame had zero commits in the class. Zero.
Yep.
And they've already got three. Two of them are top 100 recruits already. They didn't get their third. And remember, they got Keon and Brennan Vernon in back-to-back days.
Right.
They didn't get their number three recruit, Adon Shuler, till August. They didn't get their fourth commit until September when Cooper Flanagan committed. And they didn't get their fifth commitment until November when Drake Bowen committed. And then number six didn't happen until Marcus Freeman was the head coach, and that was Drake Bowen. So five commits by November, three commits by August. So I'm going to ask you this, Sean, two-part question. First part is going to be about 2024. Will Notre Dame have at least five commitments? Will Notre Dame match its number of five by the end of, so by the end of the year, of the 2020 year, Notre Dame had five commits in the 2022 class, 23 class, okay. Five commits. Will Notre Dame match that by the end of the summer? So basically August 1st.
Yes.
Will they surpass it?
Yes.
That I'm a little bit more hesitant on.
I'm going to go ahead and say they will surpass it.
Because I think there's two that you and I are pretty confident they're going to get. And then we're basically banking on someone that be a little bit of a surprise that maybe we don't anticipate that will then jump on board. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we predict that by at the very least, by August 1st, Notre Dame will have matched the numbers that it was at last year by November, by the end of the year, by December 31st.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is it gets easy to get the five guys, if we're being honest. There's a lot of kids out there that would love to come to Notre Dame. It's the quality of that five. The five they got last year, it's Keon Keeley, Brennan Vernon, Adon Shuler, Cooper Flanagan, and Drake Bowen. Those are five really good football players. When you look at the guys we think they're going to get, though, it's a similar caliber. One guy that we expect that one guy we're very confident they're going to get is ranked as a top 50 player.
Right.
Another guy we think they're going to get is like a top 120 to 150 player that we think is a little bit better than that. We think he's kind of a top 100 guy, you know, bottom of the top 100 guy. So it's not like they're just adding, you know, try-hard guys. You know, Owen Wafel's a try-hard guy, but he's a try-hard guy that's ranked in the top 200, right? He's their lowest-ranked guy. You know, Brandon Davis Swain is a top 100 guy.
Yeah.
So it's quality to that as well. So we both predict that they'll match that number. Here's the bigger question, Sean, and this is going to be different. By the end of July, what are you setting the number at, the minimum number at, that they're going to land in the 23 class?
By the end of July,
what's the number that you think they're going to land in public commitments, not silent commitments, but public commitments? Where are you at with that number? Because I think I'm going to surprise some people with my number.
22.
So you think they're going to add seven?
It's between 21 and 22. You know what?
Yeah, so you're going 6 to 7?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going 8.
Mm. Big spender.
Yeah. I'm going 8. I think they'll add 8. Now, that's a high number, and I'm setting myself up for the inevitable you don't know what you're talking about thing if they don't get there, but I'm just looking at the numbers.
Right.
Would it shock you if Notre Dame added another running back / athlete in the class between now and the end of July? Or no running backs and three receivers? Because the way I have it is like I'm looking at – I think they'll get a running back / athlete guy. I think they'll get at least two receivers. I think they'll get at least one offensive lineman. So that gets me to 4. I think they're going to add another defensive lineman, gets me to 5. I think they'll add a linebacker, which gets me to 6. And I think they'll add 2 corners, which gets me to 8.
You know what?
And I could also see it 3 receivers and 0 running backs. Like, I'm just looking at the numbers. I could see it like that as well.
Yeah.
That's where I'm looking at.
You know what the crazy thing about that is? They could realistically, like, this is, you know how you play spades and you say, well, how many books do you have? I have 4 and a possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at their hand. I see 7,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of possibles. Like realistically, they can land 9 kids.
Right. And I went under the realistic. simply because, again, we're going with the July 31st cutoff.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, like, yes, could I would be more surprised if they went under seven than if they went over eight.
Over eight. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. And
something would have to go wrong for them, in my opinion, to be less than seven. Some would have to go wrong.
Yeah. Seven is that number where you do like under, over. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. I think that seven is solid, which is absolutely an amazing job of closing.
Yeah. If
that indeed happens.
Yeah. That'd be quite the number. That'd be quite the number. When in three kids we know we're gonna know three of them for sure by the end of July 4th.
And see
whether they're gonna get them or not.
That Georgia cancellation says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when Georgia looks at, I don't know if Georgia looks at Notre Dame as a team. They might look at Ohio State and say, okay, we have to battle Ohio State for this mm-hmm. kid, but we're not worried about Notre Dame.
Yeah.
For a wide receiver. For them to cancel and say, you know what? We can't climb over both of these teams. Yeah.
Because they had fallen behind Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I mean, they had started to fall behind Notre Dame before the visit. After the visit, it was done.
Yeah.
That's why they waited so late. It's similar to Notre Dame canceling the Christian Hamilton visit. If Notre Dame didn't have numbers for Christian Hamilton for the last 2 weeks, they would have canceled him before. Right? It's based on the success they had last weekend that they said, hey, you know what? We're good where we're at.
Right. We don't want to waste time.
Yeah. And you see all these crystal balls. I'm telling you, teams
immediately said, okay, I'm ready to make a decision.
Right.
Like his decision was being held up
by Notre Dame.
By Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. And I think Georgia's coaches are smart.
Yeah.
They know how to play this recruiting game. I'm saying this in a compliment. They know two things. This is a 4.0 student whose mom wants him at that school up north, right? And not the one that wears red and gray.
Right. Exactly.
You know, so we know the kid loves already this team, the Ohio State.
Right.
Between those two, like in this instance, Georgia is the furthest school away. I mean, they're the furthest school away. They don't play in a high octane offense.
Yeah.
They don't have the academic reputation of Notre Dame or Ohio State.
Right.
And this is a high academic kid that's got a freaking offer from Yale. You know, Rico's got an offer from Yale. So I think it was a let's bow out now, because, again, I'll have some more on this down the road. But Georgia just offered Ronan Hanifin as a wide receiver, not as a defensive player, as a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Like a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
They have reached out to some other committed receivers at places. They're still looking for receivers, and they're just going to all of a sudden cancel on Rico Flores, who's down to three, including them.
Yeah.
No, they know where they stand.
Yeah.
Right? Now Notre Dame has to weather next weekend's trip to Ohio State. But the point is we're going to know Micah Bell, Christian Gray, and Rico Flores. We're going to know by the end of the July 4th, we're going to know where those three are. And based on how they commit, it's going to tell us, do we feel good about still getting to that 7-8 number? Because if they don't go 3-for-3 on those guys, then it's going to be like, okay, now where are we at, right?
Yeah.
There's a couple other offensive commits that they don't have commitments date. They don't have commitment date set, but I'd be surprised if they go very deep into July.
Yeah.
With those.
Yeah.
And then there's another defensive player that I think could wrap things up before the end of the summer as well. Now it's about, can you now convince some other guys like a Jason Moore, some of those other guys to say, hey, look, you don't have to commit to us now.
No.
But we would love for you to, because this is what we're trying to build, and we think you could help us close. If this is where you want to be, we think having you could help us close. Because, like, if you could say, hey, look, man, hey, Caleb, we need you. You know, go to all your top – so I'm just going to list all the top defensive players. Hey, Caleb, hey, Jason Moore, hey, Micah Bell, hey, Christian Gray, hey, Jaden Osbury. We really think getting you guys into class now is going to help us get, Caleb Downs and Samuel Mpemba.
Yeah.
And let's say Caleb Downs, because Mpemba's a different animal, because that's like he's not committing till like December, right?
And he's a Midwest kid at heart.
Right, St. Louis
kid.
Even though
he's at IMG, right. He's a Midwest kid at heart.
Right. So I think that's one where you could say, you could maybe use that angle. Like, look, we're really trying to do something special, because if they land Moore, Gray, Bell, Osbury, that's the best defensive class in the country.
You just scrunched up my face right
and
there.
And then if they can then add a Caleb Downs to that, but you're going to have a better chance. Because like you said, Sean, it goes back to what you said a while ago. You're not going to win Caleb Downs over with geography.
No. Nope.
You're not going to win him over with your proven ability to win championships. Nope. Because look who he's looking at. His yep. other three top schools along Notre Dame are teams that have won a title in the last decade.
Yeah.
It's going to be about the academic piece, the coaches, and the class.
The class.
You can come here and be a part of something new and unique and special, or you can just go do what's already been done there.
Yeah.
And that's the pitch. And the more elite dudes you add to the mix, the better it's going to be to make that pitch effective and to close on it. Because Caleb Downs loves Notre Dame. He yeah. does. Somebody asks, Caleb Downs, yes, he's genuinely interested, but he also loves Ohio State. He also loves Georgia, and he also loves Alabama. That's normally how it is for these kids. It's not just like one school's way above everybody else. That's like Nolan Ziegler. That's the obvious kids that are going to pick a school. For these kids like that, it's like, I love all these schools. That's why I'm having such a hard time deciding. That's why I've been to all these schools four or five times, because most of those trips on my own dime. Because I love them all and I'm having a hard time and I'm looking for what's the thing that separates the one? And I think for Notre Dame, it's going to have to be about what you talked about, Sean, is
and
for it's most, the rest of the class.
For most of these kids in 23, it's really not about what you're talking about with Caleb Downs. Is going to come down to something that is not really tangible, right? It's something that you can't put in a box. It's going to fit. It's going to be, it's not a statistic. It's a feel. It's like when they get on campus and they're around these other guys in the 23 class, it's a vibe. It's a feel. It's a sense of belonging. It's a sense of being part of something special. It's the same reason kids chose to stay at Notre Dame to play under Marcus Freeman. It's the same reason why 24 recruit Burdell Richardson tweeted out last night, man, something's happening up there in South Bend. Like, the eyes of the college football world are settled on Notre Dame. There's a reason why they took the number one running back in the country, pulled him up, and said, this is your field. This is it. This is yours. This is where you dominate. This is where you win your Heisman. Right here. This is where you become the greatest running back in the history of Notre Dame. Right here. All of those feelings, all of those vibes, that's what you have to give kids to get over what you just talked about. The rich tradition of winning national championships presently, in the present. Right? Notre Dame hasn't had that.
The last 10 years is all that matters to these kids.
Yes, that's it.
They don't care that Notre Dame went 4 years under Frank Leahy and didn't lose a game. No. They don't care that Newt Rockne won tie. They don't. They don't care that Era won two and the 88 team. It just doesn't matter to them. It's out of sight, out of mind. It's like why I can't relate to the 66 team. I wasn't alive then.
Yeah.
It was like 12 years before I was born.
Yeah.
You know, I can relate to the 88 team because I lived it. These kids care about the last 10 years. And that's I just want to make sure when you talk about the tradition of winning, just clarifying what Sean means, it's to what to these 16 to 18 year olds, it's the last 10 years.
About the here and now.
Right.
It's about the here and now. And that 10 years is perfect, right? Because the 23 recruits, they know about Notre Dame players on that 15 team. On the 18 team.
And 17, exactly.
Because that was like their infancy of falling in love with football.
That's their introduction, exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So they know about the players on that team, and that just happened to be a really talented team.
Right.
With a bunch of talented players that ended up in the NFL. So that bodes well for Notre Dame with these players in 23, 24, and 25 moving forward. So the 23 class for me is going to end up being a special class on the field, because I think they're going to be great and they're really good players. But more so, the tradition in recruiting that they're going to build because of the relationships they establish. We've already seen it evident in the 24 class, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not. This is not just Notre Dame just getting kids to come to Notre Dame at 24. No, go look at the relationships. Brandon Davis Swain, right? He commits on April 23rd. One of his best friends, C.J. Carr. Well, when he came for the visit, he already knew that C.J. Carr wanted to come to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
They're the best of friends, right? So now you have two kids that were seen pretty much spending the entire day with C.J. Carr at the Irish Invasion. One sets a commitment next Friday to make an announcement. The other one is tweeting about Michigan fans being upset. It's the relationships.
Notre Dame fans, take note. You do have, you can have an impact on kids recruiting. Stop tweeting at kids.
Yes.
Stop being emotional when kids don't pick your school, or just stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. Stop doing that stuff. Stop.
Especially doing that nowadays, stuff. Because
there's a right way and a wrong way to interact with kids. I'm gonna point to him again. Brandon Plensner is probably my favorite guy. The only tweets I've ever seen him send to kids, he'll send like a GIF, like "No, go Irish,"
right,
and a bunch of, and then he'll send a picture of something from Notre Dame. I'm cool with that, right? That, you know, but it's got to be supportive stuff. If you don't have something supportive to say, don't say it. It's just, it's not going to make you look good. There's not a win in that for you.
Yeah.
Even if you think that you're right. If you got a vent, come to the private message board, and even then, be respectful. Be frustrated with certain things. Yeah. It's not saying you got to love everything, but just, you know, tweeting at kids is just not going to happen.
It's the same game plan.
Right. Like,
the original commits in the 23 class were really tight. The early commits in the 24 class are really tight. And that bond is going to be set, and they're going to reach out, and they're going to recruit along with the staff. Mm-hmm. And that's just going to be the filling in all of those classes. And that's what it takes to get kids to Notre Dame. You have to have something that goes outside of what you normally use to recruit, right? There's no way a kid like named Randy Moss would want to come to Notre Dame. It had to be a feeling. Mm-hmm. It had to be something when he came to campus. It had to be something with Lou Holtz. It had to be something special for Allen Iverson.
Right.
Want to come to Notre Dame. It had to be something special.
But also the thing that they had is those guys came up when Notre Dame was a powerhouse. They had won a national championship within a decade. And with Bubba Chucks, it was like, I think he was older than Randy Moss, wasn't he? Or no, he was younger.
He was younger.
Slightly younger. Yeah, so like with Randy Moss, he was in high school 3-4 years after they had won that title.
Right.
He was in high school when they beat Florida State in 93 and should have won a title.
Right.
And so that's the thing, Sean, is they had both of those.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that Notre Dame is going to have to try and sell and to finish this.